Chapter 3 Atlanta, The War and New Tastes. When new immigrants come to this country, not many already knew English, and the ones who learned English overseas are rarely introduced to slang and local dialects. The same could be said for people moving from Brooklyn to Atlanta. My dad got a promotion to be a linen buyer for a department store, so right before school started, second grade, we moved into a large brick home not too far from Emory University. I went to school with my New York accent and could hardly understand the kids in my class, and they had trouble understanding me too. The boys teased me unmercifully and called me a carpetbagger's granddaughter, whatever that was, and they added damn Yankee, and I didn't know what that was either. I just knew it wasn't good. I only made a couple of friends. Mariana Turner, because she was from Wisconsin and she talked funny too, and Peggy Campbell, because her father was a professor at Emory and an intellectual who thought Peggy should have a wide range of friends. This was during the war, and one of the first things we experienced was rationing. We had meat once a week until we put together a ragtag chicken coop and had chickens and eggs on a regular basis. Canned fish was available, and we all developed a taste for skinless and boneless sardines. I love them to this day. Since my mom and dad were both city folks and didn't know the first thing about farming, they hired an African-American couple to take care of us kids and the property. Buford, we called her Buffy, and her husband Virgus White, he was called White, lived in the apartment over the garage. White was raised on a farm and in no time at all, had plowed up half the backyard and turned it into a victory garden, which it turns out was being urged for all Americans. Buffy took care of the chickens, and at the tender age of 7, I saw what happens when a chicken has its neck broken and head removed. It runs around until it stops, then Buffy would hang it upside down on the clothesline for a little while, then dunk it in boiling, maybe just hot water, and pull out all the feathers. Once that was done, it would mysteriously appear on our dinner table about 6 p.m. complete with mashed potatoes and gravy. We had rationing for shoes too. Now 3 growing children were allocated 2 pairs of shoes for a year. Sorry, but our feet grew faster than the ration books. So, by the end of the school year, we had shoes that had slits across the toes, and no new shoes until school starts again. We went barefoot in the summer, and if we absolutely had to have shoes, Mom found Mexican huaraches somewhere for all 3 of us. As you may know, and we found out, they really stretch. By the time they were worn out, they had been soaked and stretched probably 2 shoe sizes. To this day, I love huaraches. Gas was rationed, so we rarely went for a social drive. In the small business section near where we lived, there was a dance studio. Mrs. Bagley, whose husband was in the army, had classes for children. So, all 3 of us had dancing lessons. I fell in love with dancing the first time I tried it. My sister did it grudgingly, but my brother, at age 3, was a natural. Emory University had OCS classes for naval personnel, and one of our dance recitals was held at the university for the sailors. My brother was the star in a tiny sailor's suit and did a sailor's hornpipe routine that brought down the house. Sorry to say, he did not like getting all dressed up in costumes and flatly refused to continue dancing. I, on the other hand, wanted to take every class that was offered and have continued to take dance classes as often as I can. Now about the food. Buffy would cook whatever Mom wanted, and she made the lightest, fluffiest cakes you ever tasted. No electric beaters, just all done with a wooden spoon, and that is how I make my cakes too. I think they taste better. I never had cornbread until we moved to Atlanta, and the food that Buffy cooked for herself and White was typical soul food but seemed strange and exotic to me. Buffy was the person I ran to if I fell and hurt myself. She would envelope me in her large arms, maybe she weighed 250 pounds, and hug me, even if I were blubbering all over her nice, starched uniform. And she would say, "You po chili, what's the matter with you? Are you hurt? Show me where it hurts." She did the same for my sister and brother too. Never a harsh word. If she saw us doing something wrong, she would go, "Shush, what yo mama going to say she see you?" This is all relayed with affection. She genuinely cared for us and we knew it. Frequently, mom and dad would go to the store downtown, and we would come in the afternoon and meet there, usually for dinner at a restaurant. Buffy would get us all dressed up and we would walk to the streetcar. We lived at the end of the line. Then she would pay our fares and hers and go to the back of the streetcar and leave us sitting in the front. Now we're little kids, I was maybe 8, Christine 5 and Teddy 3, and we did everything with Buffy. So, I would grab my sister and brother and go to sit in the back with Buffy. The conductor would come and get us, put us back in the front seats and get ready to start the streetcar. So, I took my sister and brother to the back again. After 3 times the conductor said it was okay for us to sit back there with her, when I told him we were scared to sit by ourselves, I didn't realize it at the time, but we got a lot of stares from people getting on the streetcar. But the African Americans at the back of the streetcar all had grins on their faces, and heard Buffy tell one of them, "These are my children." And we were. I'll get around to the food soon, but I must tell you about another influence Buffy had on my life. Mom would go with Dad on his out-of-town buying trips. I think Dad went every 6 or 8 weeks and he would be gone for a week. He would visit the mills in North Carolina but also go up to NY to see the family. One trip stands out for me. Buffy was to move into our house and sleep in Mom and Dad's bed while our parents were out of town. On the afternoon that Mom and Dad left for the train station, Buffy looked out the window to make sure they weren't coming back and changed the radio station to an all-black station. That music was exciting. Then she started to dance, and she taught all of us how to jitterbug. What a great surprise! To discover a new kind of music and a new kind of dancing, wow! She introduced me to jazz, and I have been a jazz buff ever since. My mom and dad liked to go dancing, but they never knew how it was that I am such a jazz buff. On this same trip, Buffy was cooking like she always did for us, chicken or a little hamburger, mashed potatoes and peas with jello for dessert. She put us at the big dining room table where we always ate dinner. But the food she was cooking for the two of them smelled wonderful, so I picked up my plate and took it in the kitchen to eat with them. Pretty soon my sister and brother came in too. The kitchen was small, and the table was small, and then I complained I did not want to eat what she fixed for us, I wanted to eat what she was eating. No amount of cajoling made me change my mind, so she gave a small portion of collard greens and I loved it. I never got Buffy's recipe for greens, but my friend makes excellent greens and I am including her version of greens. I make greens in a crock pot because it is the easiest way. Put it on in the morning and by dinner time it is ready. This recipe also had an addition by Lisa Bigardi, a neighbor when I lived in California. Greens ingredients: 2 or 3 bunches of greens, collards, turnip, mustard, kale or a mixture of all, cut up in about 1 pieces, 1 package of ham hocks, not pork necks or smoked turkey legs, usually 3 or 4 in a package. A large onion, cut into 1/8, about 1 cl water, salt and pepper, some fresh basil leaves and twig or 2 of parsley if you have it. Directions: put everything in the crock pot and put it on high heat. I put everything in the pot in that order listed. After an hour or so, move the ham hocks on top. Let everything cook on down. About an hour before you want to serve, chop up the meat with a wooden spoon and take out as many bones as possible without burning your fingers or taking out any of the meat or greens. Now Lisa always served her Creole-style ham hocks and kale over a dish of white rice, 1 ham hock and several spoons of greens on top of the rice and pass along the Tabasco. This is a great way to serve greens if the need for stretching the dinner is needed, unexpected company, for instance. I usually serve some chopped up ham hocks and 2 or 3 ladles of greens in a bowl with the broth. The Tabasco works well with this also. I live alone now and don't always have company for dinner, so I end up eating this 4 or 5 day in a row. I don't mind a bit. My mom and dad didn't go to church and I never thought about it until we moved to Atlanta. I think all my classmates in second grade went to Sunday school. They talked a lot about it at recess and laughed at me when I asked them what Sunday school was. I told my mom I wanted to go to Sunday school and the next Sunday she took me to the nearest church, which happened to be the Methodist Chapel at Emory University. She enrolled me in Sunday school and the following Sunday, I got myself dressed, had 25 cents for the collection and walked by myself to Sunday school. Just like all the other kids, I brought home crayon drawings of Bible stories. Most of the kids had parents at the service in the main chapel, but I was alone. I never thought about being 7 years old and on my own to get home. Was I lucky that I didn't get assaulted, molested or kidnapped, a little girl by herself? I will never know. But that experience in Sunday school made me a seeker. We moved from our house near Emory to the other side of Atlanta when I was about 10. The dancing lessons ended, and so did the war. The first thing I wanted when we moved there was to continue going to Sunday school. The Presbyterian Church was the closest one and Mom enrolled me in the Sunday school. It was also where the Girl Scouts met, so I got 2 for 1. I walked to and from Sunday school every week and did the same for Girl Scout meetings. Again, by myself, the walk was more than a mile up and down hilly streets and the Sunday school experience just kept the seeker active in me. A friend of Dad's needed a place to store her grand piano until she was able to get a larger apartment. So, we acquired a piano in our living room. I begged Mom and Dad for piano lessons and they never had to encourage me to practice. To this day, I can sit down at my keyboard, much more practical in Las Vegas, with its dry weather, when I want to just relax and enjoy the music. The house we were in had a huge backyard going downhill past a badminton court, a chicken coop and lots of trees and bushes to Peachtree Creek. I didn't know it was famous until I was in 5th grade and we studied Georgia history. The Battle of Atlanta during the war between the states, never called the Civil War in Atlanta, included the Battle of Peachtree Creek, wow. Right in my backyard. I even found a mini ball stuck in the mud. The creek would shrink and swell depending on rainfall. We had wild blackberry bushes growing along the creek and I loved to go down there and pick them. We also had a resident cottonmouth water moccasin who liked to rest on a log in the creek. This kept us kids from splashing around in the water. Buffy and White moved on and didn't come with us. Sadly, about a year after we moved, we got word that Buffy was terminally ill. We got special permission to visit her in the colored section of the hospital, of course no kids were usually allowed. We got dressed up in our best clothes and took a big bouquet of flowers to her. She was in a ward with at least 20 other beds with no separation curtains. We got to her bed and she was so thin, and her eyes were yellow, she had hepatitis, but she was so happy to see us. We all cried together and kissed her goodbye. She died 2 days later. Because we had so many trees, Mom hired a yard man. His name was Dow and he looked like he was 100 years old and spoke in such a strong Georgia farmer African American accent he was hard to understand, but Mom would go down into the tree area and they would discuss which trees were to be trimmed and which were to be felled. We had a wood-burning fireplace, so all the trees were cut into firewood. Now Dow was very particular about what he wanted for lunch. He told Mom, "I only have cornbread and buttermilk for lunch." So, my Yankee mother made cornbread and bought buttermilk for Dow's lunch. He came up to the house and Mom put the cornbread in front of him with a glass of buttermilk. He looked at it and started shaking his head. No, this isn't cornbread. You didn't make it right. So, Mom asked him how he made his cornbread. He explained it had to be baked in a cast iron frying pan in the oven, which has bacon fat on the bottom of the frying pan. So basically, any cornbread recipe will do if the baking pan is a cast iron frying pan, oven temperature at 400 degrees, usually for about 20 to 25 minutes depending on the size of the frying pan and the quantity of batter. Mom got out of the way and Dao made a batch of cornbread his way. Dao was right, that was real cornbread. My mom never made cornbread any other way. We became a family of artists. This has nothing to do with recipes, but I didn't know where else to put it. A friend of Granny's, Aunt Betsy, was an artist and she encouraged my mom to start painting. Back in those days it was all oil painting. Pretty soon my dad got interested in it and we had two easels set up in the spare bedroom, which was turned into the art studio. Mom and Dad were spending a lot of time in there and Aunt Betsy said we could learn to paint too. So, most weekends Dad would play golf and then come home and start painting. Three more easels were crowded into the studio and we all started painting. My little brother Teddy was 7 or 8 and he painted houses. My sister Christine liked animals, horses and goats mostly, but I wanted to paint people, so I painted people from photos. Someone who worked with Dad found out about the family art efforts and notified the Atlanta Constitution, the local daily. So, a reporter and photographer came out and took our pictures and in about a month we had a 2-page spread in the Roto section of the Sunday paper. Back in those days, the Sunday supplement was printed in sepia tones on slick magazine stock. The feature in the paper segued into an art show at our house a few months later. There is a story I want to include here about my mother. When we moved to this neighborhood, there were two kids my age in my same class at school, Elliot, who lived across the street, and Betsy, who lived next door to him. The three of us usually walked to and from school together and frequently rode bikes together and always attended each other's birthday parties. One year I wasn't invited to Betsy's birthday party. I saw the kids carrying presents to her house, including Elliot. I was crushed and my mother was furious. How mean can you be? So, I got over it, of course, and forgot all about it when we had the art show on a balmy Sunday afternoon. The cars lined the street for a solid block up and down both sides of the street, including in front of Betsy's house. Mother and Dad had invited the whole neighborhood, as well as the president of the store where Dad worked, the mayor, the reporter and photographer from the Constitution, and the professor of art from Emory University to this art show. I asked my mother why Betsy's family was standing on their front lawn looking at the people coming to our house. I wondered why they didn't come over. My mom said, they weren't invited. That was my first experience with getting even. I did not understand it. The next day at school, Betsy asked me who all the people were who went to our house. I innocently said, oh, those were people who were interested in our family art show. I never realized that Betsy's mom refused to let Betsy play at our house, so she had never seen all the paintings we had done. Apparently her mother didn't want Betsy playing with those Yankee folks. I think more people from the South and most Southerners have become much more cosmopolitan, as information, communication and education have improved. I have not heard any negative words from Southerners in a long time. I loved my dad, he was a softy, and it was not until I was much older, I found out he was a male chauvinist of the worst kind. While in Atlanta, as most middle-class families were in those days, we belonged to a country club so my dad could play golf. He was an addict, no doubt about it. So, every Sunday, his only day off, he got up bright and early and went to play golf. It usually took up most of the day. East Lake Country Club now has PGA events, its golf course is famous, but in the 40s it was just a genuinely nice golf course, started by the famous golfer Bobby Jones. There was a small lake there for canoeing and swimming. So, in the summertime Dad would be picked up by one of his golf buddies and later Mom and us kids would drive to the lake. We all learned to swim, and it was a lot of fun for us. Mom usually packed a lunch. I don't remember Mom going in the water, but she would sit on the shore reading and sunbathing and keeping a sharp eye out for us. How horrible for her to watch Dad go by with his golf buddies on the 13th hole and she was stuck with us kids all day on Dad's only day off. Sometimes we would stay and have dinner at the club, but most times, we would pack up our stuff and go home and have dinner. Dad would most times come home after dark. And it was perfectly natural for him to leave all contact with his children with his wife. Most of my childhood I remember giving Daddy a kiss before he went to work and a kiss goodnight when I went to bed. I never heard my parents argue, but occasionally, Mom would abruptly leave and drive away. I never knew where she went, and it was never discussed. Dad would be stuck with us to get us ready for bed, but we knew the routine, so he really didn't have to do much. Mom would come home after we were asleep. Mom usually read to us at bedtime, but Dad told us stories. That was one of things that was really fun about him. He made up the stories as he was going along, and if we interrupted him with a question about the story, he always seemed to have a logical reason for the story going in that direction. Later, when I had my own children, I would alternate between reading a story and telling a story, and it even evolved into a fairy tale with everyone's input. In Atlanta, when middle-class children turn 13, they are expected to learn ballroom dancing. I was enrolled in a class where the boys had to wear coats and ties and the girls dresses and patent leather Mary Janes or the equivalent. The classes were in the summer between grammar school and high school. You can imagine the odors that drifted out of the studio. 13-year-old is with raging hormones, smelling strange anyway and dressed up. I loved learning ballroom dances but had a hard time understanding why some kids did not learn as quickly as I did. I had bruises on my feet the whole summer from the boys' missteps. I learned how to waltz, and what a foxtrot was. However, we did not learn Latin dances or jitterbug. God forbid we should learn something fun. A friend of Dad's was moving back to NY and asked us to take her dog, Riva. Riva was about 2 years old and the prettiest blonde cocker spaniel I have ever seen. She wasn't the smartest dog either, but loved cavorting with all three of us kids. Dad, who had never had pets as a child, was completely devoted to Riva. He could be seen standing at the kitchen counter, carving turkey, roast beef, or maybe a leg of lamb. He would accidentally drop a small morsel of meat on the floor for Riva. She usually got 3 or 4 accidents and then would patiently wait for the conclusion of dinner to lick the dinner plates clean. Riva stayed with us through many moves and died at age 23. My brother Ted was in high school and he and Dad were supposed to take her to the vet to be euthanized. She was almost blind, riddled with arthritis, and started having accidents in the house. Mom put her foot down and insisted they take her to the vet. Dad and Ted would put her in the car, drive around the block, and come home, by this time, carrying Riva from the car to the house. Poor Riva got the message, and after 3 fruitless attempts to get her to vet, she disappeared one night when she was put outside to do her business. Mom and Dad called her name, but she was nowhere to be found. The next morning, Dad found her 2 streets away, obviously killed by a car. Suicide by car. She was the first pet I had that did that, but not the last.